special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Yeah, what's going on? You are live here with James Bell, and I am the host of the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the Go Long Media channel on Blog Talk Radio. Number to dial in to talk boxing is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on queue to talk live on the show. We have a 60-minute live segment here this week to go over a few things here, a few news and notes in the boxing world. We'll try to cover everything that's happened, you know, over the past weekend, and then look forward to what's coming up the weekend of March 18th. Once we get through all of that, pretty much I'll put a wrap on the show here. Nothing was, necessarily a big, like I said last week, there was supposed to be a card over here on my neck of the woods over at the MGM National Harbor, but that fight card was postponed, so we couldn't necessarily, get into the MGM National Harbor for the fight card there that was supposed to have Gary Russell Jr. against Oscar Escandon as the featured bout, and the co-feature was going to be the WBC 154-pound title fight with Jermell Charlo going up against Charles Hatley. But that overall fight card has been, put on the back seat. So the DC fans will have to wait until April 8th to see a fight card there at the MGM National Harbor, as you're going to have Vasyl Lomachenko in the feature bout there for that card on April 8th. So there were a few other things that were going on in this boxing world last weekend. As we had, a middleweight fight that went on in the Turning Stone Casino Resort in Verona, New York, and he also had a key fight that was in Germany that was in the 154-pound division. So we're going to get into that here, and we also had a pretty notable event on Friday night that was over in Flint, Michigan, as you had one of the most popular women's boxers going up in their second professional fight. So we're going to get into that here in a little bit. But before we get into that, I'm going to see if we could just run a couple of advertisements here, quick advertisements, and then we'll get into that. Once again, you are listening to the Boxing Source Radio Show on the Go Long Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, all this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20-plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida. Great licensed, certified specialists, and guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today, 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting, powered by blogtalkradio.com.
Right, yeah. So we are back here on the Boxing Source Radio Show, and like I said, we got a couple of things here that we're going to cover from this previous weekend in the sport of boxing. You know, as we had a couple of fights that, you know, were fairly notable within the boxing world on March 11th, and we had something on March 10th, so we're going to see if we could go a little bit backwards with it as far as, like, covering, you know, each of the fight cards. So what we're going to do is we're going to just go into this fight card here with the that was at the Turning Stone Resort and Casino in Verona, New York. We had a couple of, you know, notable fighters on there. This particular fight card, I would say, you know, was done. You had a few people involved with it. You had Main Events Promotions involved with it. You had Oscar De La Hoya with Golden Boy Promotions involved with it, and you know, they work together to get this fight card put together. Main Events and Golden Boy Promotions. They had, you know, Roberto Diaz and Javier Razo with Golden Boy, and Jaleem Mazzoni from Main Events get these fighters put together. And you actually had you know, a few notable fights on the undercard there. Actually, this one here had something where, you know, on the undercard there was somebody that, you know, that had been mentioned in, you know, previous shows that we've had, you know, first series of shows that we had in the first year of the Boxing Source Radio Show, you know, back in, I would say, probably around June or July of 2015. We had a fight here between two undefeated fighters, with Vince Ulysse Jr., that was coming out of Montreal, Quebec, going up against Zachary Ochoa. And Ochoa has been mentioned a couple of times here on this show in the past. I've seen him, you know, fight at the DC Armory a couple of times. And, you know, he's been, you know, he was going up in the ranks here in the, you know, in the super lightweight division. And then he, went up here against Vasilisi Jr. And this was for the NABF Junior Super Lightweight title, and that was vacant. So they had a junior belt on the line there, and it seemed like even with Zach Ochoa there coming in with the 16 professional fights compared to what Vasilisi Jr. was coming into, looked like a lot of the times Vasilisi Jr. was out there. He mainly fought at Bell Center. He really didn't leave Quebec, Canada until this particular fight against Zach Ochoa. And here he was able to, pull off a win over Zach Ochoa, getting Ochoa to retire, basically retire on his stool there. So you have Vasilisi Jr. Staying undefeated and defeating Zachary Ochoa. If I wanted to, I would see if I could try to get somebody else to come in on the line to probably speak about it, but I don't think they keep up with Zach all too tough nowadays. So I might get a little bit more on that and probably write on it a little bit later within the Boxing Source of Facebook page or so. So if I'm able to get the chance, but just wanted to get that in here. I do have a caller in here, area code 205. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's going on, James? This is Mike Grady. How you doing, man?
Doing good here, Brother Mike. Doing good. Just getting the show started, going through a couple of these fight cards that happened, last night, and then I'm going to go back to what happened on Friday night. But, just getting through a little bit of these, undercard matches that happened at the Turning Stone Resort and Casino that was broadcast on HBO. Just talked about, Zach Ochoa basically retiring against Vasilisi Jr. We also had, Diego De La Hoya get a unanimous decision win over Roberto Pateta to stay undefeated. And in the co-feature bout, they had Yuriorkis Gamboa coming in here. His first fight back in, more than a year. As he last fought on December 2015, he went up against Rene Alvarado and got a unanimous decision win in that one. So now I'm just getting into, what happened here with David Lemieux and Curtis Stevens. This is a middleweight bout. They had a couple of minor titles that were on the line. Both of these guys were still, floating around as far as, like, being in contention for the middleweight titles that Gennady Golovkin has. So, but of course, both of these guys got KO'd by Golovkin earlier in their career. So, it was something where, people knew that this was going to be a, rock'em sock'em fight. They were going to be going back, back at it, back and forth. It seemed like pretty even, going into those first couple of rounds. I looked like, Stevens could have, had something, there, but, in the third round, Curtis Stevens, ended up backing into the ropes. Then, he tried to trade with, David Lemieux. Got hit with a right hand first, and then it was left hook to the chin, bam, and just he got knocked flat out. Third round knockout win for David Lemieux, and early candidate for knockout of the year. Real quick there, Mike Grady, you want to speak on this particular fight?
Yeah. So... as you said, the fight was back and forth. I think Lemieux won round one, Stevens won round two. And to me, it was appearing that Lemieux's steam was wearing off. And I felt like Stevens was going to, as the fight went on and Lemieux's, you know, tank depleted faster than Stevens, that Stevens would take it as the rounds went later and later. The punch that did it was definitely, you know, as you say, he was trading with him. And I guess the thing that he did wrong was that Lemieux threw a shorter punch. And, you know, with his punch being more wider, I mean, he did get hit by the first punch, but his punch was on the outside. And then Lemieux threw a real, like, short punch, a short, sharp punch. And, I mean, from point A to B, he got there first, and he got, you know, like, he punched, like, through the guy. Actually, it didn't seem like all that devastating of a punch. You know, like, when I looked at it, I was like, well, damn, you know, like, because he didn't – I mean, it was a really short punch. But all that power to come from a short punch, that may speak on his power. But, yeah, he just got beat by a short punch. And, you know, Lemieux, I saw a comment on Facebook. Somebody was like, Lemieux was messed up because he didn't even go over there to check on the guy. Yeah, I agree with both sides of it. It ain't his job to go and check on the dude. But at the same time, yeah, this man was laying down there for over 2 minutes, knocked out, you know. So one would think that, you know, you would be like, well, damn, it's over. I won. Hope he all right. But I guess, you know, it was bad blood leading up to the fight, and he really didn't care. So, which is the art of war.
Yeah.
So.
It was a kind of you know, concerning there with that type of knockout. But, you know, it kind of, like, depends on the situation, because sometimes, you know, they'll have, you know, if someone gets, like, brutally, you know, knocked out like that, then they'll have a lot of the, you know, EMT people coming out there into the ring just to make sure that they're able to check on, you know, who is down there, you know, on the mat. So, you know, for Lemieux to, you know, not really check on him or anything like that, that's kind of a, you know, sketchy situation. I was, you know, pretty surprised at the amount of activity that was done by not Curtis Stevens, but David Lemieux, especially in the first two rounds. He, you know, nearly, you know, was going at, throwing at almost 100 punches per round, and he was, you know, over 100 punches thrown in the first round with 117, and he ended up having 95 punches thrown in the second round. So that was a high amount of activity that was being thrown out there by David Lemieux, especially in these early rounds. 117 punches thrown total in the first round with 57 of those counting as jabs, in comparison to 37 punches thrown by Stevens in the first round, with only 9 of those punches being jabs. So, yeah, you were right. Lemieux was coming out there smoking in that first round there, like he was, you know, really trying to, you know, get at it from the start.
And so that's an interesting point, because, like, I don't remember exactly what happened in the second round. I think Stevens landed the more sharper punch. I think Stevens' output increased on the second round too, right? Because if you say that he threw 95 punches in that second round as well, then, you know, that kind of speaks for itself. But mm-hmm. I feel like Stevens connected a lot more in the second round. Something had happened that made me think that Stevens might have won the round. I don't remember exactly what it was, if his output was increased or if he just landed, like, the cleaner punches or something. Do you remember what happened in the second round?
I think it was more of, like, a more effective connection by Stevens in the second round. He did throw a little bit more, but it wasn't, like, significantly more. But I think the, you know, overall effect of those punches that were coming through for Stevens kind of, like, you know, affected the offense of Lemieux a little bit in the second round.
But I think Stevens got some real, like, big arms because his guard, I mean, I know he could feel the punches through his arms, but, you know, like, if all you got to do is just kind of sit there and then the punch is not even getting through, I think that was his, you know, like, that was going to, well, I mean, I can't say that was going to lead to the Muse downfall because, I mean, we all know it happened, but I just felt like it was the momentum and or with him throwing them 100 punches in both of them rounds, he started, like, kind of, like, you know, cooling down a little bit. But I guess he had enough power left over. I mean, that third round, he threw a really short punch, and it was obviously powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's like, one thing that you, like, as a fighter, you know, can't necessarily really get caught with. I mean, we know, like, Stevens kind of had that moniker of, you know, having power and things like that. But you can't like get caught, you know, in a good trade with somebody like David Lemieux. And I think that kind of was a downfall for Stevens when he went up against Gennady Golovkin. He didn't necessarily, I would say, you know, respect his power all too tough until he really got caught, you know, later in the fight against Gennady Golovkin. And then here against Stevens, that was, his downfall as well. There was something else that was, go ahead.
Is, okay, he threw 100 punches both rounds against Stevens, and I know it's a different opponent, but why did it look like when he fought Gennady Golovkin, like he was gun-shy? Like it looked like one of Tyson's fights, one of Tyson's first 25 fights, where the guy come in there and be all spooked and stuff, like Leon Spinks. It looked like that fight where he walked in and he was just like, you know, kind of unnerved, and then throughout the whole fight, Golovkin jabbed, and I mean, effectively, I can't like diminish the fact that a good jab will diminish a power puncher all day. But he wasn't even trying to throw; like he didn't even try to throw. Like he threw like hot fire at Stevens, but shit, if you felt like you was gonna get knocked out, and you knew this guy was a better boxer, why not go for it? Why not try to touch him? Why not try to hit him? Like, you know. I don't feel like he
– right.
I can't say he didn't try, but I don't feel like he was out there. Like with Stevens, you could tell he was like, shit, I'm going to knock you out. If you knock me out, oh, well.
Right.
But Golovkin,
yeah.
He was like,
Yeah, he was kind of tentative. He looked kind of tentative in that fight against Gennady Golovkin. And, I mean, you saw that in the, you know, first few rounds there. I mean, I'd like to see. I wonder if I could get those stats on that particular fight. I'll probably have to look for it somewhere to where I could, you know, get the stats on, you know, what went on in that particular fight. Let me see if I could, get those up. And while I get those up here a little bit, let me add area code 813 on here. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's up, James? This is Terrell calling from Tampa. Not sure on where you left off at, but just kind of just get into just a few things while you're doing those stats. Glad to see that Andre went overseas, got him a title. So what's cool about that, just as we have one significant player move from 154 up to 160, I mean, although Andre's been there, but him having a belt makes the division and makes him more significant in that regard. But yeah, just wanted to hit that up real quick as we wait on those stats for the fight that you're speaking on. But definitely, yes, sir. Good week of boxing, good action, and once again, good movement at 154 with the activity from this past weekend. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm gonna get on that there a little bit for the Demetrius Andre fight. I was trying to see if I was gonna get a round by round thing for Golovkin and Lemieux, but the, let's see, total punches thrown by Lemieux was 335 punches thrown against Gennady Golovkin in comparison to, yeah, definitely threw more than that. you know, in this particular fight against Curtis Stevens. And I'm like, you know, that average round, let me see if they had a, you know, round average for it. I think they would have had it somewhere. But, yeah, 335 total punches thrown against Gennady Golovkin in comparison to the amount of punches he threw, you know, in under three rounds against Curtis Stevens. I don't know why he didn't, you know, kind of, you know, put himself out there against Gennady Golovkin. That would have been, you know, something that could have, like, thrown Golovkin off. You know, sometimes you really have to go for it. And I might actually touch on that later on in the show here about, you know, going for it against Gennady Golovkin. But, yeah, here against Stevens, I think that was something that, you know, kind of was pointed in this particular battle. One other thing that I did see in the boxing scene was that before the fight, they were supposed to have a I think the IBF. They're saying this thing may have been under the IBF, but they said like the IBF has a rule where you have a day of weigh-in. Yeah, same day weigh-in, and that you have to fall within a certain weight area before going into the fight for them to, I guess, properly sanction or something like that. And David Lemieux missed that same day weigh-in. Stevens was able to, you know, fall within the 170-pound weight that is required for, you know, them to, you know, prove you, but David Lemieux ended up not weighing there. It wasn't that he didn't miss the weight, it's just that they said he didn't weigh in. So that possibly could have been a concern there as far as, like, overall ramifications of that particular fight. Is there anything that that y'all saw that kind of, like, see within Lemieux that seemed, like, kind of different when he was in the ring against Curtis Stevens or not?
I don't know. I'm speaking as a fan, and, you know, I'm not a professional level boxer, but I'm kind of disappointed that he'll go for it against Stevens and everybody else he fight, but then he was afraid of the listening. Like, that's kind of disappointing as a fan, because you just said he threw 100 punches in the first couple rounds. And then even though in the third round, he kind of slowed up, he you could just tell he was going for it. Why not do that with Golovkin? Like, why not? I mean, it just kind of, I feel like I got cheated in the Golovkin fight because he was so gun-shy in the Golovkin fight.
Yeah, me personally, I'm surprised, a bit surprised by this result, a third round knockout. I mean, we both know these are power shot guys. We know that. They definitely exhibited just them, both themselves in their fights before this. But I was definitely kind of shocked to hear that Lemieux got the third round knockout on Stevens. And Stevens, you know, has been there with some tough fights. He went to some good rounds with Triple G before getting put out of there. So we've seen him take some good shots. But like I said, Lemieux, he's definitely been known as has good power. But I was, like I said, third round, I was definitely surprised on this one. So. The fact that he missed that second weigh-in, that made him ineligible for this minor title that was at stake. Is that significant? No, not really. I mean, the main thing, he won. You know, hope he doesn't test positive in this day and age, you know, but that definitely puts him right in line for future fights at 154. And what's funny about that, I don't know if you touched on it at all yet, James, the fact that Charlo is ranked at number two. And that's actually above Stevens and Lemieux. So that's curious in nature, but still, it shows how much respect they have for Charlo. So, but with Lemieux's win, he's right in line for top fights at 154, 160. So,
speaking on Charlo, I would like to see Charlo fight Lemieux, maybe in two fights.
I've seen that being floated around that Charlo would fight Lemieux pretty soon there. So yeah, but I do also think that having Jermall Charlo being put in the rankings like that is kind of interesting. But that almost is the that almost is similar to where they put in Badu Jack high up there in the WBC rankings for light heavyweight there. So yeah, I would kind of like look into that as well though, to see like how that came out to why he got that ranking so fast.
Yeah, because, I mean, for him to not even have one fight at 160 and get number two just like that, and I think number three or something like that in another record organization, I think, IBF or something like that, but that's either a lot of respect or a lot of backdoor stuff.
I think it's number three. They put him at number three. I'm looking at the IBF website now. You know, and as of through the month of, February, at the end of February, going into the beginning of March, they have Jermall Charlo there at number three below Turiano Johnson and Sergey Derevchenko, with Eubank and Stevens down there at five. I mean, Eubank and Stevens down there at five and six with Lemieux at seven. So Lemieux is probably going to be going up in the IBF rankings there. But Stevens and Lemieux were number two and number three in the WBC, what I'm looking at. So, Lemieux is, pretty much high up there in the WBC rankings for middleweight. It'll be interesting to see what happens here with Jermall Charlo there in the IBF. But I think that, either he'll go up against David Lemieux or, maybe even Turiano Johnson there, depending on what they want to do with that IBF rankings there. Oh, also, Terrell, did you, catch anything with, Gamboa coming back?
No, I didn't get to see that fight. I mean, I just read about it in brief. Heard it's a big lackluster, so did you actually see that one?
Yeah.
I didn't see it.
Nah, I wasn't, able to, catch it. Seems like it was a very sloppy fight there.
So I saw the fight, and it was the same old with HBO having their narratives. Roy Jones Jr. was kind of the only one. It started kind of with Max Kellerman, and he started saying that, I understand that he's off, but you would think that, him being off and understanding that he's in this crowd on the same car as Lemieux Stevens, that he'd have to come out here and, do this or do that, pretty much get wild and get caught like he normally do. And then Roy Jones was like, well, yeah, that's what I want as a fan, but him as a boxer, he knows that that's when he gets caught and, he don't have the timing down, blah, blah, this, blah, blah, that. And so I can see why he just wants to win because, when he did get crazy, he got caught a couple times. I mean, not much, but just a couple times. And then, of course, what's the other guy named? White hair guy. What's the other announcer name on the HBO telecast? I forgot his name.
Oh, Jim Lampley?
Lampley. So Lampley, of course, said the negativity. Actually, he started off and was like, yeah, I understand. He probably don't want to get killed, coming back. But then, of course, he kept to his narrative and started calling the man, like, lackluster and all this and all that. And so he got, opened up at a couple times. But the reason why the fight was lackluster is because the guy wouldn't attack him. He was in the middle of the ring a bunch of times. And so you know how some boxers – move and stay moving. Lara, who does that? Lara keeps on the move. That's his defense. He keeps moving. Gamboa pretty much stayed centered, and all he did was kept his front foot in the center of the ring and just turned on a pivot with his front foot being in the middle of the ring. Like, he moved a little bit, but that's what he, for the most part, did. He occupied the center of the ring, and then they kept talking about it was a boring fight, but it was only boring because the guy wouldn't engage with him. He was the one who had to pretty much engage in the fight, and so they're trying to blame that on Gamboa. And when Gamboa did engage, he got caught one time or something, or two times, and then...
Yeah, he did.
It's, you know, it's just kind of, I don't know. I think that they try to paint these narratives, and then you have, you know, regular fans like, Gamboa sucks. He don't do this, or he don't do that. Knowing good and well, Gamboa is the one who will get crazy just to please a crowd and then get knocked down or, you know, clipped or something.
Yeah. Because he ended up getting clipped in this fight in that 10th round. And, you know, it's kind of difficult with him, like you said, with all that inactivity, number one. And number two, he's 35 years old right now. You know, I mean,
yeah,
he's been in the game.
He's 35.
Yeah, 35. And so, you know, he was in the game for, you know, up to 10 years at that point. But, yeah, he's had, you know, only three fights within – you know, the past 3 or so years. But, you know, ever since that loss that he had to Terrence Crawford, you know, that kind of like, you know, put him, you know, over in the back burner or something like that. And I think, you know, having that loss to Terrence Crawford and, you know, not getting the big opportunities after that hurt his career. And, I mean, yeah, he had those, you know, key fights against, you know, Orlando Salido and Jorge Solis, but, you know, other than that, he really hasn't been, you know, placed in a lot of these high-profile fights that, you know, people expected out of this Cuban.
I have a sort of, like, I don't like how when they introduced him, the telecast, they introduced him sort of along those lines, but they said that he had such high, you know, high hope. We had such high hopes for him when he beat Salido and these other fighters early in his career. But since he got beat by Terrence Crawford, he pretty much his career. I mean, they didn't say it was over, but they was like sort of saying that he sucks now, and you know his career ain't what it used to be just because he got beat by Terrence Crawford. But the crazy thing is, okay, he got beat by Terrence Crawford. A lot of guys would probably get beat by Terrence Crawford. He got knocked out by Terrence Crawford.
Right.
A lot of guys would probably get knocked out by Terrence Crawford. But if you still put him down at a lower weight, probably would give Lomachenko a run for his money if he was you know, active. He would probably give a lot of guys at 130 a run for their money, and he has to give them a run for their money now because, as you said, he's 35 years old. So this guy ain't gonna be fighting for no more than 2 or 3 more years, you know. So
yeah,
probably more. But I'm just saying, his shelf life is now. It ain't tomorrow.
Yeah, but I mean. Yeah, it's kind of different with the lower weights because, I mean, they're more prone to, you know, throwing more punches and getting caught a lot. So you if you are there at the upper, you know, upper age there, your overall reflexes are going to slow down and your overall output is going to go down as well. So you'll be prone to getting hit with a few shots, especially if you're going against younger fighters within those divisions. You know?
Yeah, I just hate that they paint this guy like that and then try to pretty much say that, you know, his career trajectory ain't where it need to be, because all it takes is for one or two of them fighters to actually get in the ring with this guy, and then he'll be back, you know, on top. He just lost to Terrence Crawford, which is not like a bad feat, you know. That's kind of like normal to lose against Terrence Crawford.
Right, right. Oh, excuse me real quick. All right, let me just get into what Terrell mentioned when he got on was the WBA regular super welterweight title fight that happened in Germany between Demetrius Andrade and Jack Colke. Andrade was able to get the win over Jack Colquay. It was a split decision win. He got two 115-112 cards, and the other judge, I think, gave the fight to Colquay 115-114. He looked like Andre kind of like dominated the first few rounds of the fight. They said like he outlanded the jabs like 14-1. And then his overall punch output was 953 punches over the fight compared to 570 punches by Jack Colquay. And he threw more punches. He landed at a better percentage pretty much all across the board. And even with, it looks like here that Jack Colquay didn't even land a jab within the first four rounds and landed just two in the first six rounds of this fight. And yet he was able to get one scorecard from the judges, which is something that I think a lot of people kind of expected going into this fight, since it was going to be over in Germany there with Jack Colquay. But Demetrius Andrade stays undefeated, becomes the WBA regular super welterweight champion, and sees if he could get another shot at one of these guys that are under Al Haymon, specifically Arislan Di Lara there. Or maybe, you know, what Jared Hurd, who is the current IBF super welterweight champion. So, anything else about Demetrius Andrade?
My first thought is like, look at someone like Andrade that's been there for a while and has never made it to that top echelon. And you can kind of mirror his career in a sense to, let's say, a Lamont Peterson. He's been there. He's had good fights, but not necessarily made it to that top echelon. So he's back now. He got a good win. Hope that this he can use his opportunity to catapult himself into that top level. I mean, because he's been a somewhat of a favorite of a lot of people. Never had much negative to say about him. But right now, it's time. It's time for you to realize your opportunity and get in the ring with someone and either do it or not. You know, because, you know, he's been there for a while, but like I said, he's never reached that top echelon. So I hope that we can see him do that, you know, with some of these other title holders.
What you got, Mike?
I see what you're going after with your comparison, but I think Lamont Peterson is different, because Lamont Peterson had opportunities to be at the top echelon. Like, Lamont Peterson fought all these top-name fighters. He just came up short in a lot of the tests. And that's the only reason why his difference. I wouldn't say that Boo Boo hadn't had the fights to prove whether or not he is at the top echelon level just yet, I don't think. But Peterson has had the fights to at least be in the conversation. And, I mean, he's competitive. Like, he's a top-level fighter, but he just come up short. Tim Bradley, Danny Garcia, Matisse, who else he lost against? He should have lost to Khan, you know. But Demetrius Andrade, I started watching the fight like later in the second half of the fight, and the second half the dude was winning to me. At least the parts I was seeing, I was watching it online, and it was kind of like freezing a little bit too. But it like he was getting touched more than what he was touching the dude. Maybe he was tired, I don't know. So. Hypothetically, let's say he won the first six rounds, and then the other guy won most of the last six rounds. I don't know. I can't speak on the first six rounds, but I don't think it's out of the realm that the guy actually, you know, should have got some scorecards going his way, because in the second half he was definitely winning, in my opinion.
Well, so you're saying that Colquay was coming back in the second half?
I mean, when I was watching, he was touching him. He was touching Andre more than Andre was touching him, and Andre was pretty much looking tired. He wasn't, in my opinion, throwing for real. He was sort of throwing, but he wasn't throwing. The guy was throwing more. His motor and tank was more fuller than Andre. So I mean, this ain't a fight that I would go back and watch again. But I wouldn't put it out the realm of possibility that the guy actually had a legitimate claim to, you know, to some scorecards going his way.
Yeah, it's interesting.
To Terrell's point, or maybe your point, but whoever said this, whether he should go after Hurd or Lara, he should stay away from Lara. That'd be a sad day for him if he fought Lara. But Hurd, I mean, the guy, I don't know. I think that might be interesting between those two. But I think Hurd should lose against him. I don't know. I said Hurd supposed to have lost against what's his name, but then I didn't consider the dude hard.
I also thought that Andre was saying something about the contender in the WBC that won recently, Erickson Lubin. I might have to see if that was him that particularly said that. But he was also, I think he was also talking about Erickson Lubin too. So, and I mean, with Hurd beating Harrison there, you know, getting the IBF super welterweight title, I think that like moves Lubin up in the WBA rankings there, you know, and plus Lubin is very high in the WBC rankings. So, if Andre is not able to get anything with those other fighters, then maybe he could get something with Erickson Lubin.
But I think Lara would probably take a fight with Demetrius Andre. I could see him taking that fight. Even though he don't necessarily gain anything from fighting Andre. So maybe he won't take the fight.
Yeah, maybe not. All right, we got around 12 minutes left here on the show. For those that are listening here on Blog Talk Radio and want to talk live on the show, you could call in. The number is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on queue. You'll be able to talk live on the show. All right, real quick before I get into what's happening next week, I just wanted to touch on Clarissa Shields in her second professional fight. She was able to fight in her hometown at, in Flint, Michigan. She went up against Sylvia Sabados. It was for like a minor middleweight title, the NABF middleweight title there. It seemed like Sabados, they were saying that before the fight, that Sabados was moving up from the lower divisions to face Clarissa Shields. I think, yeah, he was over at super welterweight in a fight before, going up against somebody that was 3-4, and she got a TKO victory there, and then, you know, ended up moving up to face Clarissa Shields for this vacant middleweight title. It was basically something where, you know, Shields was the, you know, supposed to be the bigger person, she ended up, you know, Clarissa just ended up bum rushing Sabados, hit her with a lot of big punches, even though Sabados didn't really go down to the canvas at any point. It was a mismatch from the beginning. The referee ended up stopping the fight to give Clarissa Shields her second professional win. So I just wanted to touch on that real quick. All right, looking forward to, you know, what's happening next weekend over at the Madison Square Garden. You have this big middleweight championship fight with Gennady Golovkin and Daniel Jacobs there, with Golovkin being the WBA super champ, the WBC, IBF, and IBO champion, and Daniel Jacobs being the WBA regular champion. And this is like something that, you know, was a pretty big fight. You know, you have Jacobs there coming in as the a bigger guy, kind of like floating around. Let's see, he had these 7-day weights here on Friday. Had Golovkin there at 162 pounds and Daniel Jacobs being at 167.8 pounds. You know, so they got Jacobs, you know, coming down pretty much around 7 pounds, I guess, in the past 21 days there in comparison to Gennady Golovkin just going down about, you know, 3 pounds. So that was, you know, something that people were looking at with Jacobs being a much bigger person there. And you have, you know, different people working with Daniel Jacobs here leading up into this fight. So this is going to be a fairly interesting bout there. But one of the other notable things that pointed out in the past in a couple of boxing forums is that the overall ticket sales are seeming, you know, kind of patchy in my book. I think in the first level of the Madison Square Garden, there's a good amount of seats that are still available out there. So I wonder how that's going to be, you know, filled out leading into the few days before the fight, because you have that in comparison to the last, I think the last fight that Golovkin had with Lemieux, where it being sold out, you know, fairly quickly because of the, you know, the price point there. So that's a couple of things that I wanted to point out first here with this upcoming middleweight title fight. And going on what Mike Grady was saying about how, you know, Jacobs should approach this fight. I mean, yeah, Lemieux should have just went at and Gennady Golovkin in that fight that they had. And I think Jacobs should try to go at him like this too. I mean, he was able to do that against, you know, in his last win that he had there. So I don't see why he shouldn't do that against Gennady Golovkin and see how he responds to it. You know? So, Mike Grady, what you think about that particular approach to see if Daniel Jacobs goes at Gennady Golovkin like he did against Peter Quillen back in December of 2015?
So I think his last couple fights are going to be why I don't know if he's going to come at Golovkin like that, because he came at Sergio Mora like that, and you saw what happened with Sergio Mora. He came at Peter Quillen, and it was on his ups. I mean, and it worked out for him. I mean, both of them worked out, but he got dropped by Sergio Mora, and Sergio Mora ain't really a power puncher per se. I think he should go after him, but maybe not in the first round. I mean, maybe he should. Maybe he should come out and try to, like, blast the dude, because conventional wisdom tells us that Golovkin might be able to outbox him. Jacobs may have the speed. I don't know who has the speed advantage. I haven't really, like, followed both of them to, like, just compare and see, like, you know, who should have the speed. But I know that Golovkin can get touched, and I know Jacobs can throw. So why not throw at him? You know, like, maybe move. But then if Golovkin's the more superior boxer, then maybe he should just try to just go for it. All I know, he better not be scared like Lemieux was.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Hey, Terrell, what you got?
Well, yeah. Like you were speaking about the weights leading up to the fight, where I think you said Golovkin's at 162. I think I forgot what you said Jacobs is going to be at. I'm not too concerned about that. Keep in mind that Jacobs does have Algeria in his corner as a professional health technician and things like that. So I'm not concerned about that, because, I mean, at the same time, we've never seen Jacobs miss weight for a fight. So not concerned about that at all. One thing in comparison, they posed a question to Stevenson and Lemieux, in regards to the prospects of Jacobs and the Triple G fight. Lemieux pretty much said that he stopped short of saying Jacobs does not have a chance, right? And where someone like Stevenson, who has known Jacobs since the amateurs as friends and things like that, he said, Deppy does have a chance. He said, sometimes Jacobs can't have a chin problem. And we notice every time they talk about Jacobs, they mention the fact where he got knocked out against Pirog or whatever the guy's name is some time ago. But to answer your question, should Jacobs come out and approach this like the Quillen fight? I would say no. I mean the thing about it, we know that Triple G has a less than stellar record against less than stellar opposition. The guy can't punch. We know that. But at the same time, we haven't seen him against that top tier level fighter. How does that power carry forth? So should he go for it? I say should he do like the Quillen fight? My first response would be say no. So definitely need to get some fill out rounds and things like that. Even from the Jacobs Quillen fight, I mean, still shocked at that result, and I still want to see more from that fight. You know, because here you got two guys in their prime, good opportunity against each other, friends, things like that. And one guy shockingly goes out in the first round. I'm like, wow. I want to see more. Give me more. Give me at least three or four rounds or something, you know. So should he take that approach in this fight? No, I don't think so. I mean, I would give Triple G that much respect to fill him out some, feel his power, and certainly want to see how he feels my power too, because you want to follow your game plan. You don't want to just go off your game plan and then fall into a trap and get hurt. You don't want to do that. That's why you got training camp for a reason, to follow your game plan. That's why you got a coach. That's why you got a trainer. That's why you have to listen to these guys and everything. So, I mean, of course, if there's an opening there, you see something right there, then of course, go after it. But for this fight, a lot is on the line, so you don't want to be out of position. You don't want to be off your game plan. So definitely, I would advise against going right after Triple G, despite the fact that he's a bigger man.
So Terrell evoked something inside of me that made me rethink or think about a little bit more how I feel on him going for it. So should he go all out and just like be like, oh, I'm going to lose anyway, so let me go all out? No, he should not do that. I agree with Terrell and when he says that. But the blueprint is there where he should, you know, move. Don't be in the lion's den. And then when he gets near the door, you gotta throw stuff at the door. You gotta hit the sides of the door and stuff. You gotta swing and then just keep moving, you know, move and just stay out of Triple G's like way. So I think at some point he should let his hands go. He should let his hands go with fierce intentions. But it should be a controlled fierce intention going forward type thing.
Yeah, I kind of understand that. Especially the whole thing about, you know, trying to approach this thing with Gennady Golovkin, you know, with the game plan. That's why you go through training camp and everything like that. The only, you know, reason that you would try to, you know, bum rush somebody like Gennady Golovkin is if you have full confidence that you feel that Gennady Golovkin can't hurt you and you feel like you're the, you know, much bigger, you know, much bigger person and that you could take his punch. But, you know, with Golovkin's overall track record, you can't really approach the fight like that. And, you know, with Jacobs' overall, you know, track record, he can't really go all gung-ho against Gennady Golovkin because he might get caught, just like he did against Sergio Mora in that first fight. So right now he's, you know, basically approaching this fight like he's, you know, really serious about it. You know, try to go at it and see what weaknesses he could see within Gennady Golovkin and try to take advantage of those. See if he's, you know, prone to specific punches that he can catch Golovkin with. So we'll be looking forward to that particular fight there. They also have on the undercard, they have Carlos Quadras and Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez out there. So, and they're going to be in, you know, a couple of fights too. You're going to have Roman Gonzalez defending the super flyweight title against Wasackskill Wangak. And then Quadras will be going up against David Carmona. I think this is just going to be a prelude to just having them fighting each other again later on this year instead of, you know, getting this particular fight, this rematch over with. And I think, and to me, that kind of like hurts the overall card a little bit, because if you had, you know, Golovkin Jacobs and then Gonzalez Quadras too, that would have helped, you know, ticket sales a little bit. You can't really say much about anything else that's a part of this particular card too, because, you know, people don't know that much about the Ryan Martin, Brian Cruz fight. They have Andy Lee coming back, and it's been a while since, you know, Andy Lee has been in the ring. And I think they were saying that the fighter that they have there for him is a secondary fighter or a replacement fighter. That they had original plans for Andy Lee to fight somebody else, but that didn't come through. So, yeah, I don't know what to make of this particular card here, specifically the Carlos Quadras fight. But it's saying that the Gonzalez-Wangek fight may be pretty good here. But, you know, kind of like, you know, extending this potential rematch between Gonzalez and Quadras, there is one thing. And the other thing is that there's been a talk that Gonzalez may not even stay in the super flyweight division, that he may move up another division, which I hope he does not do, because, you know, one of the potential fights that they could have as super flyweight is Gonzalez against Naoya Inoue. And, you know, if he wants to move up to the bantamweight division, that kind of like, you know, puts that, you know, out to the side. Yeah, puts it out to the side there. So hopefully that does not happen. Start with Terrell. What you think about the undercard here for this particular fight card?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't really get to catch that one. Like I said, just one guy was obligated with work throughout the entire weekend, so I didn't catch that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because, yeah, they had this thing here with Quadras and Gonzalez on separate cards. Real quick, Mike Grader, you got something on it?
So I think what I took from what you said was it a better option for them to go ahead and fight now as opposed to setting up a fight in the next Golovkin pay-per-view? Maybe that would have helped with ticket sales, but as you said, that the price points are different. So I think that's ultimately the difference. You know, if you give people $30 tickets, they're going to buy $30 tickets. But if you give them $70 tickets, they're like, oh, sure, can I buy the $70 ticket? I mean, I'm interested in them fighting again. And, I mean, it's no given that Chocolatito can win this fight, because, you know, they anoint him to number one pound for pound, and we see that the guy got a couple flaws. Yeah, he good. Yeah, he offensively, he can throw with the best of them, but you can't anoint him. I mean, he ain't that dude, because, I mean, there are people who could probably beat him.
Yeah, I mean, he does have a couple of weaknesses on there that, you know, kind of like open them up against some of these, you know, some of these opponents that are there either within the division or, you know, divisions above them. So you can't like necessarily, you know, put him there as far as like the top pound for pound fighter, man. He has those type of weaknesses or openings there. And that fight against Quadras should have, you know, kind of like open the door there. For people to, like, have their skepticism of, you know, Roman Gonzalez there. So, yeah, I'm not necessarily certain if this particular fight that he's going to have here is going to help his case, one. And then, two, if that eventual rematch happens, that doesn't necessarily help his case either, especially if he has the same amount of troubles that he did have against Quadras the first time. So that's something there that, you know, I would be interested to seeing if he's going to be able to move forward from this particular fight that's going to be coming up here on March 18th and then in the future against Quadras. All right, we are here within the overtime portion of the show. Just wanted to touch on a couple of things here. One of the things is something that Brother Terrell brought up with me here earlier today, in reference to the news of Floyd Mayweather saying that he is out of retirement to fight UFC's Conor McGregor, and that he demands that McGregor commit to a crossover bout in the month of June. And Mayweather says that he's only come out of retirement for one person, and he said it was for Conor McGregor. He's saying here that he's asked for a guaranteed $100 million to make the fight happen. But they're saying, like, they're having a split there with UFC president Dana White, who is saying, like, $25 million to each fighter. And the thing is that with McGregor being contracted to UFC, Dana White and the UFC would have to approve that fight that Conor McGregor would have against anyone, whether it's within UFC or within boxing. Then that's pretty much what it is here at this point. And seeing if they're going to try to make this fight happen, but like I said, I mean, there's still so many you know, roadblocks to try to even make this fight possible. One, and then even if you do announce this fight, what else is going to be on it? I mean, is it just going to be that one particular fight? You know, and it's it just seems that it's something there where it's more of like an entertainment thing, especially like when I, you know, when it was first rumored. I think it was just something that was all entertainment, that it was an exhibition, and you know, so on and so forth. And I mean, this isn't like, you know, boxing many years ago, like 20 or 30 years ago or so ago, where you could have somebody that's in boxing that has had, you know, the amount of fights that Floyd Mayweather has had, and then have him turn around and fight a guy that has, you know, like one professional fight, three professional fights, or something like that. You know, me bringing up an example with Julio Cesar Chavez Sr., who, you know, kind of had fights against guys that were like 0-3 or, you know, 10-25, but I would say like 2-15 in his 67th professional fight. This is kind of different here in this case. So, to me, it's more of like a, I would say it's like more of like a money grab for Floyd Mayweather there. So, that's pretty much how I would see this particular thing coming up here. So, Terrell, I'm gonna get at you first. You want to extend what's going on here with this thing with Mayweather and McGregor?
Yeah, well, I mean, you everybody knows the story. So for the longest, they said that they didn't want to fight. Mayweather said he's retired. McGregor saying, no, let's fight. I can do it. Then we got the checkpoint when McGregor got licensed, I think, in California or something like that. And even still then, Mayweather said that he didn't want to fight. He's retired, and so on. Everybody knows the story, right? So just keep moving forward. So every now and then Mayweather throws out a barb, saying, "Oh, it could happen," you know. And basically what that's doing, he's baiting everyone. He's baiting everyone. Oh, maybe. And he's generating the interest in the fight. And now all of a sudden, Mayweather's on a tour over in the UK. I've been watching some videos in the past few days. He went to England. He's going to visit some other Eastern Bloc countries, Czech Republic, things like that. And once again, all that's doing is generating interest in the fight and generating pay-per-view numbers. That's all that this is doing. And all of a sudden, while he's over there, then he finally said, let's get it on Conor McGregor. Let's do it in June. Because basically, he's, once again, he says promoting. And I mean, any event that you have, whatever it is, if you promote it, they will come. If you promote it correctly, they will come out in mass numbers. And that's what's going to happen on this event. And I know, James, I think you said that you think he'll make something like $100 million. Me personally, I think it's going to be more than that. $150, $200 million, something like that, you know, cause, and most of that's going to be coming from pay-per-view buys and everything. And it's funny, I think, something I read last week where basically Mayweather, the director of the comment to McGregor, said, let's get together and make this fight happen and get your ass whooped for whatever amount of money, which is pretty funny. But that's essentially what's been set up. Like I said, with him being on that European tour at this point, he's promoting the fight, and it's going to sell off and sell off huge. So that's what we're looking at right now.
Yeah, true. Yeah, Mike Grady, we got to sit on this real quick because I have another question to bring up about it.
What were we talking about again? I forgot. I'm sorry.
Oh, the thing about Mayweather saying that, quote unquote, he's coming out of retirement and he's only doing it for, you know, one fight against Conor McGregor.
I think it's probably some of the easiest money he probably could make. He would hopefully go for a knockout in this fight and make $25-50 million off of fighting somebody who's going to get tired after the first round. It's like easy. I think he's smart, as you said, drumming up like attention overseas and stuff. That's pretty smart. But do I think what's name realistically gonna fight him? Probably not. Cause why would he? It's not very high percentage chance for him to fight. How much bigger is Conor McGregor than Mayweather?
Yeah, I think they're around the same height, but I think McGregor like comes in there as a, you know, a higher weight though. That was my first thing about it. I thought that Conor McGregor was somebody that was, you know, listed higher as far as like his overall weight. Well, he's around 154.
Oh wow. Okay, so since you throw that, then yeah, definitely. Mayweather might get his first knockout since Victor Ortiz in many, many years.
Yeah. Because, he's only there at 5'9", 154. Right? That's what they're, you know, listing him as. My thing is, with Mayweather going over to the UK to kind of like push this potential fight, what if they even considered, even though it would be like a very long shot if they actually announced the fight, what if they considered having the fight over in England instead of in Las Vegas?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. That would be smarter though, right? Because you know,
from a marketability standpoint, I would think so. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, why not have it, you know, over in the backyard of where, you know, Conor McGregor is from, you know, where he has a lot of his supporters, instead of having it in Las Vegas, where, you know, it may not be more of a possibility for those supporters to be behind Conor McGregor or something like that.
I don't think McGregor got a license to fight in Las Vegas anyway, a boxing license to fight.
Yeah, not in Las Vegas. He does in California, but not in Las Vegas. You know, so that was the thing on that. All right, one of the last things here that I was going to touch on in the show was the eventual fallout of a fight that seemed to have been announced a couple of weeks ago, and that is Manny Pacquiao and Amir Khan. So they had on their social media accounts that they were going to go up against each other in April, and then next you saw that that wasn't going to be in April, that it was going to be in May, and then after that, come to find out, there was somebody there that didn't necessarily know about what was going down, and his name is Bob Arum. And thing about it is, here Bob Arum saw what was going down, and he was like, "Oh, hold up, nah, ain't nobody told me about, you know, Manny Pacquiao fighting anybody, much less Amir Khan." So, seems like he was saying, "Ain't no way, ain't no chance that this fight is going to happen." So, seems like that potential matchup has been shot down. So right now, we don't necessarily know what's going to be going on with Manny Pacquiao anytime soon on one end. And then on the other side, you have, you know, Amir Khan that, like, seemed like he had a potential match with Manny Pacquiao. Now, that's been shot down. There's been rumors about him potentially fighting Kell Brook, but, you know, that kind of fell apart. And Eddie Hearn was saying that now they don't expect the fight between Kell Brook and Amir Khan in the near future or at any point. It was saying that Amir Khan was requesting a 70 to 30% purse split of the money for that potential fight there. And so they're saying that it looks like Khan is basically in limbo right now as far as like who he's going to be able to fight there. So I don't know what's going to happen here with Amir Khan. I mean, he did have, you know, that fight against Canelo Alvarez that kind of like saved him from a business standpoint. But, you know, other than that, he's not been, you know, open to fighting any guys within the welterweight division out there without having some crazy demands here and there. So anything y'all got to say about both Manny Pacquiao and Amir Khan?
I would be skeptical on a lot of stuff that comes out of Manny Pacquiao's and or his team's mouth. That's all I'm going to say on that. I think Amir Khan should be skeptical of who he fight because he's an older fighter and people are trying to use him to build their name. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a business, so Amir Khan should protect his business. I mean, as a fan, yeah, I would want him to fight everybody, but he ain't no up-and-coming prospect. He got to be selective. If it ain't like the top people, Bradley, you know, veterans like that, then he shouldn't risk fighting them. He shouldn't fight a Keith Thurman. He shouldn't fight. Maybe he can fight Danny Garcia again. But Keith Thurman, no. You know, Bradley, yes. People like that. Mayweather, of course.
Yeah. I mean, there's still like a lot of potential fights that Amir Khan can have. It's just that he's not been, you know, somebody that's been willing and available to take them. I mean, he could have had a lot of good, pretty good fights over the past couple of years if he, you know, was willing to step up and take those fights, but he just didn't necessarily want to do that. Terrell, you got something?
Yeah, it's kind of curious with Khan. I mean, look at this point. You got several prominent UK fighters, Joshua, the great insurmountable David Hay, right? But no, really, you got Joshua, David Hay, Belew now to a point, Khan, Brooke. What's the kid's name at freaking 168? What's the name? The one supposed to fight Triple G last year? Mike mentioned him earlier in
today's show. He has a father.
Oh, that is Jack.
No, not the Latin kid.
Oh, no. DeGale.
DeGale. He's supposed to fight Triple G last year at 160 last September. They said they didn't sign a contract, something like that.
Zerto Ramirez. They're both to Ramirez.
No, UK fighter. Latin kid, good size.
The only
good
other one is either George Groves, maybe.
Eubank.
There you go. Chris Eubank. So you got a handful of fighters, and where you keep in mind, people over there, they support boxers. They support
yeah.
boxing events. Where from they
yep.
got a few beans over there, they can fill out, 30, 40, 50 plus thousand. And
yep.
you want to tell me that people like Khan can get on a soapbox and try to breeze himself out of a fight trying to get too much money? Come on, man. That's I mean, and these days, you're not going to see those type of numbers in any U.S. arena over 30, 40,000 unless it's a prime pay-per-view. I mean, are those days gone? Probably so, U.S.-wide, until someone rises back up and creates that market. But over in the U.K., you got guys that have that market, and they will come out 30, 40,000 to fill up arena to fight, and that guarantees you good money. So it's kind of inconsiderate when you see somebody pricing himself out of a fight in a sense. And prior to the Errol Spence fight, when Brooke was still on the fence about what's going to do next, would he actually fulfill the mandatory obligation, or would he try to get a fine line with Khan? And they were trying to do that. But once again, there's a fight over the money. I'm like, how can it be fighting over the money when it's so much they're going to generate with that? But here we are with Khan without an opponent yet again. Here we are with Pacquiao without an opponent. And it's kind of unbelievable to think that Bob Arum didn't know about that. It's kind of unbelievable because at that point, Manny's advisor, Kant, something like that. It's hard to believe that they were not in discussion with what's going on with Manny's next fight. And like I said, for him to drop out of this fight, like I said, what does he do next? Go back to Horn? And I even saw an article on Boxing Scene where it suggested that Pacquiao fights Thurman. Do I believe it's going to happen? No, I don't. Would I love for it? Of course, I would love for it to happen, but realistically, I don't see it happen. And that's more or less too much risk on the side of Pacquiao. I don't think he wanted any parts of these young, hungry guys, whether it be a Thurman, a Spence. And that's a short list. I mean, we've seen him fight Bradley too many times. We saw that. We don't want to see that again, of course. But where does Pacquiao go next? And I said, I don't think he wants to see any parts of these young champions. I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't see him coming close to many of those guys that are within the welterweight division where he would kind of, have a good shot of losing or, having a good shot of trouble there. That includes Thurman, that includes Spence, that includes, even Sean Porter there or somebody that, maybe is – even though he's not one of the younger guys, but maybe hungry, and that's a Andre Berto. I mean, I don't even know if he wants to, really put himself to have that particular fight. So there's only so much that Manny Pacquiao can do here at this point of his career. And one of the things that I did that I necessarily stumbled on in the boxing circles is that there may be a possibility that Manny Pacquiao had his contract with Bob Arum and Top Rank delayed a year because after the fight that he had with Floyd Mayweather, they said he was under medical suspension there for a little while. So, I mean, he had, that one fight there against Floyd Mayweather, and then the next fight was, against Timothy Bradley. And so,
you know, those two fights there, that was pretty much almost like a year apart. So I think they said that he had like a 10-month suspension or something like that where he couldn't fight. And, you know, with that, I don't think that makes his contract active. And the last I checked, his contract on the Top Rank was supposed to be ending at the end of this year. And so if that means that the medical suspension was still in effect, then, you know, he still would probably be under contract with Top Rank until 2018, instead of the end of 2017. So that's something there that may be something that I would like look into there to see if that was the case there within that the whole shoulder issue that he had. Because it said that, they said that it was potentially a medical suspension in that case, but I'm not sure if that actually went down or not. But if he's still under contract with Bob Arum Top Rank, then there's nothing really he can do there. That's kind of like what Floyd Mayweather was telling them there before their, you know, before their upcoming fight, was that, hey, you really ain't got that much freedom under Top Rank, number one. And number two, it seems like Pacquiao has like a lot of debts that he has to, you know, recoup. So that was the whole thing there with what he had to do under the contract that he has with Top Rank is to, you know, kind of like see if he's able to get out of it. It's not like a fight, like a number of fights that he got to have. It's more like how many years he has under that contract. So on that note, I'm going to pretty much see if I can wind this down here a little bit before 9 o'clock Eastern time. Sure to catch the show here next week as we're going to go over the results of that card that's going to be at the Madison Square Garden here. And I'm going to see if I could just be on chill mode here for the week, get ready for this potential big snowstorm. Hopefully it doesn't get bad up here next week. And in the meantime, the Sure to Catch Your shows that'll be on the Go Long Media channel here, the Cold Hard Truth on Sports on Tuesday night, and Take This L on Wednesday night. So be sure to catch those here on the Go Long Media channel on Blog Talk Radio, and catch the podcast show of this show here. That'll be available later today. And follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, and on Instagram there. And like I said, at the end of every show, folks, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, I'm out of here.